everyone, and welcome to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 LPFM. My name is Elaine Summerfield, and I'm your host for Inspire Indeed, where we're learning about community issues and the amazing nonprofits and community leaders that are working to address them. We're in the midst of a five-part series on the complex issue of homelessness in our region. I first had Kelly Kinghorn, the director of Homeward, on to talk about some of the overarching issues or provide some context on homelessness in Greater Richmond. Alice Tuzion from Virginia Supportive Housing then shared how the nonprofit she leads provides housing for some of the most vulnerable homeless with a high level of need. And they serve primarily single adults with mental health issues or some other form of disability. And though single adults make up the majority of people living in homelessness, our community has seen a continually growing number of families with children that are in need of a home. Some of this may be attributable to the economy, job loss, difficulty finding employment, but there are additional issues such as addiction or domestic violence that families often face before they reach self-sufficiency. I've invited Kimberly Tucker from St. Joseph's Villa to talk about families and children experiencing homelessness and what's unique about some of the challenges that they face. Kimberly is the Director of Family and Community Services at St. Joseph's Villa and a strong advocate for families. Welcome, Kimberly.
Thank you.
St. Joseph's Villa, I know, has been around for a long time, but many of our listeners probably aren't familiar with the organization, even if they have driven by on Brook Road, that
right.
big campus up there.
Right.
Can you give us a brief overview of the Villa before we get into the specific topic of homelessness?
Sure. Yes, I think a lot of people are confused. We've been around for 178 years. We started out as an orphanage. But since the 70s, we have been a multi-service agency, and we're a private nonprofit. And so right now we sort of categorize our population that we serve into three categories: children with developmental disabilities, at-risk children and families, and homeless families. The children with developmental disabilities or special needs, we provide education, we have schools on the campus, we have an after-school programs, we have intensive in-home services for children and families that are struggling with behaviors that they're not sure how to deal with, and we have summer programming as well. Plus, we have homeless families that we serve through Flagler, which is who I work with.
And you work with Flagler Home.
We're a little bit bigger than Flagler Home. We're calling it Flagler Services right now.
Okay.
We may even be changing our name because we're getting sort of big. So in terms of just our services are getting broader all the time. And so it is more than just, most people know Flagler Home, which is transitional housing on the campus of the Villa, which serves just single women and their children who have been homeless and gives them a place to stay until they get back on their feet and into their own housing. But however, for 18 years, we've also run a community-based program which assists families of any composition that have become homeless and need help getting back into housing in the community. And those families can live anywhere in Richmond, in Henrico, Chesterfield, the greater Richmond area.
So it's the services as well as the home that's on the campus.
It's the on-campus program as well as what we're now calling off-campus. And then we also, in last November, opened a program in Petersburg in the Tri-Cities areas to serve homeless families and some individuals as well.
Oh, Petersburg
area.
We're providing those
families with prevention money to stay housed. Pretty much in Petersburg, actually, we're serving anyone that has a housing crisis. So
they may be at risk of losing their home, but still in a home?
Yes, they could be at risk. They could be doubled up with family or friends, living in a car, in unsafe housing conditions, all those situations. So in a sense, in Petersburg, we're serving as a central point of entry for anyone that is in a housing crisis.
Okay, but at St. Joseph's Villa in Richmond region, you're really focusing on families.
We're focusing on families in the Richmond area, that's right.
Okay, and of all the services that St. Joseph's Villa provides, how are you supported? Like, what type of funding comes in to support all those programs?
The Villa has a wide array of funding, and I think that's probably how any nonprofit has to be now, has to be very diversified. We have, for many of the programs and services that serve children, are funded through Medicaid, through billing Medicaid. We get quite a bit. We get money also through the Community Services Act, which is education for children with special needs, the Department of Juvenile Justice, the Education Department, mental health funds. We have contracts with local and federal government, and of course, the Flagler receives funds from HUD, Housing and Urban Development, DHCD, which is Virginia Department of Housing and Community Development, the Veterans Administration. We actually have, we're working with Virginia Supportive Housing, who you've already talked to, and they are serving single veterans, and we're serving veterans that have a family that might be homeless or at risk of homelessness. So we have many private and philanthropic funds, and we have to raise quite a bit of private funds to both match some of those grants and just keep it all going.
So part of it is, a good part of this, the funding is from public sector, but also relying on individuals, foundations, other philanthropy to support
it. Quite a bit. And we're fortunate in that way.
Well, looking back at the Flagler Services portion of St. Joseph's Villa, could you share a little bit about, let's look first at the Flagler Home piece of it. How many families are living with you at Flagler Home?
Well, Flagler Home has been going through quite a shift, and we were started, the Flagler Home was started about 23 years ago by a private donor who started it to serve homeless families and mothers with their children, to provide them with long-term 2 years of support before they went back into their own housing. We have served as many as 26 families, but right now we're serving 9 families because there's a real shift right now, and our focus is really on putting people into housing as soon as they become homeless. So we're trying very hard and working with the state and with HUD to rehouse families quickly into their own apartments and then provide them with the services, the same kind of services they would have gotten at Flagler Home if they lived there for a year or two, but this way they're already in their apartment and we provide those services there. So right now at Flagler Home, we just have a capacity for 9 families, and we're hoping to keep those families to not keep them as long. Our new thinking is that it's better if we can go ahead and get them into their own housing and then provide them with the support services they need to stay housed.
Okay. I think when Kelly Kinghorn was on, she talked about it. She referred to rapid rehousing.
Rehousing is the new big word.
Okay. All right. And it sounds like some of your funding sources are shifting their focus.
They are shifting that way. And I was resistant to the whole rapid rehousing idea when it first came out. And
Tell me a little bit about why you were resistant.
We were resistant because the kinds of families that end up in shelter or transitional housing, they have more obstacles than just the fact that they don't have housing or they don't have the income right now for housing. There's a lot of things that have led them down that path to homelessness.
And it's, what sorts of things?
Well, many of the women that we serve were in and out of foster care their whole lives when they were growing up. So they had a very unstable background. And many of our mothers had, lived in shelters. That was kind of how their family survive sometimes. So there was that. There's the relationship issues that might have led them into homelessness. You got an apartment with your boyfriend, and next thing you know, there's a party, and there are all these things. Break up, but there's the violence issue, the domestic violence, and the skills. At one point, it seemed that a large number of the mothers living at Flagler Home did not have their GED. They had maybe dropped out of high school when maybe pregnant, or maybe they had just moved around so much they just didn't finish. And not because of a lack of ability. I mean, what we find is people go back to school and get their GED very quickly. But then again, and that was the other thing, getting your GED can take some time. Mm-hmm. And so we felt people needed time to finish that. Flagler was actually originally built on the model that we were going to try to give people the long-term skills to not become homeless again. And we were also trying to give mothers the time to get skills and education enough so that they could earn a living wage and be able to support their children as single parents and not, have to go back into necessarily a bad relationship or whatever. So our goal was to prevent them from ever becoming homeless again.
So were you worried that a rapid rehousing model would take away some of those services?
We were, and we all just felt that we couldn't move, that we were concerned that families wouldn't be ready soon enough. But what we learned was that a couple of things. Sometimes the women were, particularly if they were younger, there was sort of a lot of adolescent sort of resistance to the programs that we had, what we were offering. But what we found is the people who live in already in their own apartments were very eager to work with us and to receive the services that we were offering. And that started to shift, I think, over the years a little bit more towards that. And I think part of it is just that most of us, once you have an apartment, you know, you really want to hang on to your own apartment. It's something that's yours. And so we think there's a motivation factor there in living on your own. And people were more receptive to receiving the services. So basically, we just sort of took the services that we were providing at Flagler Home and started doing even more of that in the community as it was needed. Now, we're still in the learning phase of seeing how this works. But anyway, we did do a pilot program with Homeward to serve families who were what we call low barrier. And so many of them were two-parent families with maybe, you know, at least two incomes, but usually they were each working two jobs. So about, you know, four sources of income, you know, two part-time jobs or whatever each. And we started rehousing those families, and we were able to rehouse them very quickly, and we sort of amazed ourselves. And
but it sounds like those are families, you describe them as low barrier, meaning they don't have
obstacles, but they had more work experience, they had a little bit more maybe life experience.
And having two wage earners in the household.
Exactly.
Difference.
And maybe a little bit more of a support system. We are looking at, now that we are making this shift even deeper at Flagler Home, we will be rehousing some of those young mothers I was just talking about who have a number of barriers, but at the same time have some strengths. So we feel they can do it, and we are excited about it. And we feel like, you know, it's a pilot year. We're taking a chance. But we have seen that we are seeing the model work. We know, you know, with Gender Supportive Housing and the singles, that the rapid rehousing model has been working very well with single homeless individuals who have a lot of obstacles, a lot of strikes against them. So it's time to branch out there and try it with families, and we have a lot of support for that. Every time there's a grant out there for serving high barrier families, we go for it because we really do want to see if we can make this work.
I would imagine it takes more resources. I mean, for example, if you had a parenting class at Flagler Home, many mothers could take advantage at the same time. But now you need to go out and do that all one by one, or do you rely on partnerships or other resources? To be honest,
a big tenet or whatever of this model is to use the resources that are already in the community and sort of stop reinventing the wheel. And we do some great stuff at Flagler, and I would love for us to continue to do in many of those things. And we've done parenting classes, but there are parenting classes out in the community, and you might be able to go to them in your own neighborhood. And by going to that community center and having a parenting class, you might actually meet some other friends. You might begin to develop a support network. So, you know, that's what we're really looking at. I think the rapid rehousing model, to me, for the high barrier families and for anyone, it hinges on developing your own support network. And for many of these people, some of the families that we serve, it will be a new support network because they really don't have the family support.
Or maybe have never had one.
Not much. That's the kind of thing that could lead you to a shelter or a Flagler Home is really just having nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. People always say, I know, oh, but for the grace of God go I. Well, I get irritated with that expression. I say, no, if I became homeless, my sister would take me in. She may not want to, but she would. I mean, it's hard to imagine not having any support network, but that's really what the case for some of these women that we serve.
Well, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Kimberly Tucker, Director of Family and Community Services at St. Joseph's Villa. And we're talking about homeless families and children in our region, some of the approaches to helping them back to self-sufficiency, and what we might do together as a community to address this issue. So I'm curious, how do families find you?
All kinds of ways. In the past couple of years, we have noticed that it's been mostly self-referral. So it's word of mouth, maybe getting, you know, online, seeing us online, calling. We get a lot of agency referrals from other shelters, emergency shelters where the families have been briefly. And since we were a longer-term shelter, and we still will be longer-term, but we were a second stop along the way. But the new way that families are going to find us, hopefully, one is going to be through Homeless Point of Entry, which is run by Commonwealth Catholic Charities, and that is the central intake point for anyone that's homeless in the Richmond region. for us to be able to serve them, they are going to need to go through there and be screened first to see if they can be helped with prevention or diversion. And basically that means see if they can stay where they are, if maybe they can stay doubled up. Maybe it's just a matter of maybe
what
they...
What do you mean by doubled up?
What's well, okay, doubled up, you know, with another family, basically. But sometimes those situations are not good, you know, it's not working out well, it's causing a lot of tension, or they're not really safe, or maybe it's putting the first family's tenancy at risk because they've got their friends all living in their living room and their landlord's saying, no, they've got to go. But sometimes maybe the cousin or whatever has an extra bedroom and she doesn't really mind her cousin staying there with her kids, but she wants some help with the rent. So if that's the case, prevention money can be used to help maybe pay some of that and take some of the tension out of that and until that person can find a job and then, you know, contribute more. So everyone will have to go through Commonwealth Catholic Charities homeless point of entry to make sure they have been screened for that first.
So where are families usually going after they leave your program? I mean, they may leave Flagler Home or when they exit your services.
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully they're going to their... own apartment. And in the housing world, we call it permanent housing. But what that means is a lease in your own name. So that is the goal.
If they're receiving the services, like they are in an apartment that you're helping to support and providing those services while they're in that situation, how long do they normally stay in that program?
We hope they stay for at least a year. Mm-hmm. But and remember, when we help people in the community, we may help them with some, in the next year, we're going to have some money to help people with, like this, to maybe pay a portion of their rent or help them pay the security deposit, maybe a month's rent up front and get situated, and then they can take it from there. Whenever we do that, though, the lease will always be in their name. It will never, we at Flagler and St. Joseph's Villa, we do not own any apartments, you know, in the community like that.
So it really will be their place.
It will be their place. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they'll remain in your services, support services.
And so we're thinking for, it depends on their needs, and it's really going to be entirely up to them. It could be 3 or 4 months. It could be up to a year.
Thinking about the families that have been experiencing homelessness, imagine it's a very traumatic experience for the children and the families. They've been through so much at such a young age, and
how do you
ensure that all of their needs are being met, like dealing with the trauma as well as just the day-to-day of getting to school and providing some sense of stability?
Well, when they come to Flagler Home, the first thing we do, if they have school-age children, then we make sure they understand, first, they have their rights under the McKinney-Vento Law, which is a law that pertains to homelessness and education, basically says that those children have the right to remain in their school of origin. And so transportation can say, so say maybe you end up in a shelter in the city of Richmond, but your kids have been going to school for 3 years in Chesterfield County. Those two entities have to talk to each other, Chesterfield and City of Richmond, and work out transportation for the children to stay in Chesterfield, assuming that's where you're hoping to go back to. Now, what we see a lot of is that we're based in Henrico County, so a lot of families actually want to, they've moved around so much at that point that they just want to enroll their kids in a school. And we have a wonderful elementary school near the villa called Holiday Elementary, and so the kids are enrolled there. So that's the first thing. And then to keep kids going every day on a regular basis, we help the parents with routine. Sometimes they've moved around so much, or maybe they just never even understood really that children need routine and structure. And so we really help them with sort of those basic skills, you know, getting the kids, you know, fed and bathed and in bed by 8 o'clock, you know.
What about the children that are younger than school age?
Okay, we have, we help them to get enrolled in childcare in the area. And so they're immediately enrolled in child care. And part of that is also so that mom can get out and start, you know, looking for jobs and getting things sorted away. So we have been fortunate enough at Flagler that we have been able to have private funds to support that child care cost. It's pretty, as everybody knows, child care costs a lot. Mm-hmm. But that's important. And the kids get into a routine. And what we find is that children are pretty resilient, you know. So I think that in a way, once they get on a schedule, the younger ones get settled down pretty quickly. They can be pretty, you know, wild, you know, when they first come in. They've been moving around a lot, you know, but then they get very settled down. I think one more thing I would like to say, and that I think is a plus for rapid rehousing, is that I think for school-age children, you know, and I relate to this because I have a school-age child, is I think that the last place a school-aged child wants to be when they're 13 or 14 is living in a shelter or a transitional housing
or
program.
A group setting like that.
A group setting. And then having, and now the school bus is really good about picking the kids up maybe first and dropping them off last. Other kids don't see where they live. But if you do think about that, think, you know, and I think it, that that's definitely to me a case for rapid rehousing, even though we love having the kids of all ages at Flagler. It certainly makes our lives and our jobs more fun, but I think having your own apartment and you know, when you're 13 or 14, you know, that age, having the kids go back to their own home at night, having a quiet place to study. But at Flagler, we do provide we have tutors for the kids if they need it through Henrico County. They help us with that. They could even come on site and do it. We have mentors for the children, for the school-aged children. We have mentors that come and spend 2 hours a week with them, just playing outside, flying a kite.
Volunteers that come in.
Yes, we have wonderful volunteers. And then we have groups. We have church groups. Like St. Gabriel's, who've been coming ever to the villa for 10 years, and they just bring toys and games and everything and take the kids outside, and it's a breath of fresh air. So we have a lot of things like that to offer, and I think also in doing that, every time we engage children in activities like that, the moms get to see, oh, well, this is how, you know, this is something that, you know, was fun and you know, because to do with their children. So
can you share a little bit about the types of barriers that people face or the challenges or roadblocks that may come up that prevent them from self-sufficiency?
Well, what we see are, I mentioned the low education. People might have dropped out of high school, not had their GED. That can be an obstacle. The low job skills that people therefore might have had, may have never had a job even, you know. The thing that I think comes up that it surprised me a lot when I came to Flagler is the number of women that were at Flagler with felonies. And I thought a felony was something huge you had to have. But actually, in terms of a monetary crime or a crime of theft, it's just anything over $200.
Anything over $200?
Yeah. So we've had families. We've had a young woman with children who her theft from a store was $200.09 the day after she became 18 years old. That felony is on her record for the rest of her life. And many employers will not hire, mm-hmm. particularly if it's a theft felony. Mm-hmm. And of course, a drug felony, you know, can be bad as well. So
get a job.
And if you can't get a job, then you can't get housing. And that really, really, really is a huge issue in Virginia right now for me. And we're just seeing it constantly. So that is one. And the other thing is that we find families with so much debt. And I sometimes I would think, you're 24 years old. How could you have $7,000 worth of debt? Mm-hmm. But they do. And usually it's from being in an apartment, either getting evicted and being responsible for the remainder of the lease, because some landlords will hold you responsible for the remainder of the lease because you signed it, so even though you're evicted. So, and then sometimes they just walked away. Or, you know, boyfriends aren't there, still living there, or whatever. They've just walked away. That goes on their credit record, and that prevents them from getting another apartment. So there are many obstacles like that that we need to get through somehow.
So are you working with women on the financial literacy piece?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. That's a big part of the types of services that we provide at Flagler and, of course, in the rapid rehousing as well. Budgeting, financial literacy, understanding contracts before you sign them, knowing what you're getting into, and knowing how to be a good tenant. Mm-hmm. We have a big focus on that as people move out into their own apartment. So we want them to stay housed. We want them, you know, we are working with the landlords too. Again, they're signing the lease, but we're telling the landlord, if you have a problem, you know, here that's being unresolved, give us a call and we'll try to mediate. We just started with an employment specialist at Flagler, and her job is to recruit employers who are willing to take a chance on the moms and the families that we're serving, and then to keep resolving issues. Because if you've never had a job, and maybe you're 30, but maybe your work ethic is a little more like a 21-year-old or something.
Because you know, you don't have the experience.
Right, you don't have the experience, and you don't realize that if you, you know, your child is sick, you need to have a backup plan for that. So you really need to have a plan. You need to have, you know, and you need to keep that job until you have another one. So maybe you don't feel well treated at that job, but you really need to hang on to that until you have your next job. So we're going to have an employment specialist who's going to be working. We already have her, and she's working with employers to try to resolve some of those issues.
What can our listeners do to help Flagler Home or Flagler Services? Or can you think of ways that our listeners could help participate in our region's efforts to end homelessness?
Yes. I think, you know, obviously it has to be a multi-pronged effort. And there are people who are at risk of homelessness all around us. And so I think the churches do a phenomenal job, you know, getting involved with your church. I would certainly say, obviously, I mean, we have an annual campaign in the Villa, and we need the funds to be able to match these other funds. So much more of this is matching dollars these days. So, I mean, I know people like to get involved and have a personal relationship, and we try to do that with the mentor program. So certainly, you know, the mentor program is a wonderful way to get involved with the Villa with a school-aged child.
How would people find out how to get involved?
At the Villa, they would call Catherine Stanley, our volunteer coordinator. She's our volunteer coordinator, and she can help match a volunteer group for a one-day event. Mm-hmm. She can, you know, help people to funnel them into the mentor program, and we have training for that, so you don't have to worry if you feel inexperienced.
Great. And do you have a website where people can go?
We do. Our website is St. Joseph's Villa in Richmond, or neverstopbelieving.org.
Neverstopbelieving.org. Mm-hmm. That's a nice mission.
Yeah, I will. And yeah, it was around before I became along, but I love it because I think it's really true of the Villa. I really do think that we are an agency campus-wide that never stops believing in people. So
yeah, and the difference that you can make, mm-hmm. and that they can make in their own lives,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Kimberly, for taking time out of your busy day to join me. My name is Elaine Summerfield, host of Inspire Indeed. And I've been talking with Kimberly Tucker, Director of Family and Community Services at St. Joseph's Villa. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 LPFM, Richmond Independent Radio. Homelessness is a complex and multifaceted issue, and thinking about families and children is just one lens on it. I hope you learned something new on the show today and maybe felt inspired to think about how you might make a difference with your deeds.